debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And should the debt ceiling be abolished? And will the GOP dig in on slashing Social Security and Medicare? These appear to be the big questions of the day now that it's starting to hit the mainstream media that Republicans are desperately trying to figure out how to put together a budget or legislation to overcome the debt ceiling that would dial back on Social Security and Medicare. One of the proposals that Republicans seem to be very fond of is raising the retirement age for Social Security and Medicare from the current 65 for Medicare and 67 for Social Security, raising it up to 70. That's brilliant, right? It's going to be really popular. It's fascinating to watch this play out because in 1990, whatever year it was, five, I think it was, when Newt Gingrich first drudged up this 1917 Liberty Bond law, which established the so-called debt ceiling, it had never been used as a political weapon before. I mean, Congress just routinely every year, it was just an accounting thing, you know, raise the debt ceiling. And Newt Gingrich went to war against Democrats. I mean, absolute war. Now, truth be told, that war had been first declared by Ronald Reagan in 1981 when he, you know, went after the unions, PATCO, when he went after Democrats more generally, when he, et cetera. And Gingrich was just getting with the plan. But here Gingrich realized he had a weapon that could be used to beat Democrats over the head, to force them to dial back their out of control spending. And he used that to go after Bill Clinton. And it worked. Bill Clinton dialed back spending, cut back on welfare programs, limited most federal welfare programs to 5 years. So this is the end of welfare as we know it. Cut back on housing supports, cut back on just a whole spectrum of programs that were remnants of the Great Society, of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society. And the consequence of that was that it increased inequality and increased poverty in the United States, but it did produce a balanced budget. And frankly, hurt the Democrats badly. I think it's one of the reasons that Al Gore did not become president in 2000, although, frankly, I think Al Gore actually won that election, but that's a whole other rant. During the Clinton presidency, they used the debt ceiling as a club. During the George W. Bush presidency, when he ran up, put into place almost $3 trillion in tax cuts for billionaires, it's actually turned out to be more than that over time. That's the projection over the first decade. And George W. Bush also, in addition to the massive tax cut, committed us to $8 trillion of spending with two illegal, unnecessary wars that led to the death of 7,000 Americans and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and Afghans. I don't know if you heard, or Afghanis, I don't know if you heard the NPR report this morning. No, I'm sorry, it was BBC. It was the BBC podcast I was listening to last night as I was going to sleep. They had a reporter in Afghanistan, and they were talking to these families who, Afghanistan right now is experiencing the harshest winter in over a decade. And hundreds of people have died of being frozen to death. And this woman was talking about just going to get water, going down to the river to get water for her family, burned her hands and feet so badly that the skin is peeling off. You know, she got frostbite. They interviewed another woman who had a coat on, but it only came down to just below her elbows. It was, you know, it was some leftover thing from the U.S. military, and it didn't fit her. Tragic. That was what George W. Bush gave us. So anyhow, they kept raising the debt ceiling throughout Bush's presidency. Hey, you know, you want to have a war? No problem. You want to have tax cuts? No problem. And then, of course, Barack Obama comes into office, and it's like, oh, where's that debt ceiling? Yes, let's use that to beat up Barack Obama. And Obama let them beat him up with it and said, oh, yeah, OK, let's, you know, Simpson Bowles, let's go with a chain CPI. Let's cut back on Social Security benefits and slow down the growth of those programs over time so that inflation will go faster than Social Security and Medicare do so that we can, you know, quack, quack, quack. And thank God, Bernie Sanders came out and held a press conference and said, I will block this in the Senate. And a bunch of other progressives joined him. And that was the end of Obama's little flirtation with austerity. But he produced a balanced budget, too. I mean, you know, he danced to the Gingrich tune as well. It wasn't Gingrich at that point, but, you know, he danced to that tune. And then, of course, you got Donald Trump into the White House for 4 years. And what did he do? Another $2.5 trillion in tax cuts for billionaires and big corporations that you and I have to pay for. And I suppose you can't blame him for the spending for COVID, other than the totally incompetent way that he handled COVID that led to the death of over a million Americans. But, you know, another couple of $1 trillion being spent on COVID. Was I saying $1 billion before when I was talking about the debt that was being run? If I did, I meant trillions. But we're talking trillions of dollars here. And so now we've got this massive debt. You know, we're over $30 trillion in debt. And the Republicans are using the debt ceiling to try to beat up Joe Biden. But this time, I don't think it's going to work. You know, Biden is saying, no, I'm not going to negotiate with terrorists. If you guys want to cut spending to reduce the national debt, Biden has already cut the national debt by $1.4 trillion, or the deficit. The deficit in this year's deficit, which was last year's Biden budget, this year's deficit is $1.4 trillion smaller than the last Trump deficit. Now, again, you know, cut Trump some slack, something I don't like to do, but I do believe in being honest on this program. A large part of that had to do with COVID. But nonetheless, Biden has cut the deficit. The deficit is your annual contribution to the debt. And he's now saying to the Republicans, okay, you know, you want to cut spending? Tell me where. And they're just running around like chickens bumping into each other. I mean, it's just, it's a sight to behold. Mitch McConnell came out and said, well, you know, if the House Republicans want to cut Social Security and Medicare, that's up to them, but it's not going to happen here in the Senate. In other words, you're on your own, guys. So, you know, for years and years, the Freedom Caucus, the Cokehead Caucus, they've been taking money from the Koch Network and other right-wing billionaires who all want Social Security and Medicare, or many of them want Social Security and Medicare to be eliminated altogether or privatized. They don't think it's an appropriate function of government. And we'll tell you that with enthusiasm. They've always been able to kind of get away with trying to force Democrats, you know, this is the two Santa Claus story, to trying to force Democrats to shoot the Democratic Santa. And now the Republicans are going to have to shoot that Santa themselves. And I don't think they're going to want the fallout from this. I think this is going to be a really bad thing for them in the 2024 election. And I think they're figuring it out. And then on top of this, now they've got this thing that Scientology proposed years back. And some Scientology people apparently in Congress got a promise from Kevin McCarthy that he would bring it to the floor for a vote. They call it the Fair Tax. And what it is they're going to eliminate the IRS, eliminate the income tax for everybody, corporations and people, and fund the entire federal government with a 30% sales tax nationwide. So your eggs go up 30%, your gas goes up 30%, your rent goes up 30%, Cost of buying a new car goes up 30%. Absolutely everything goes up 30%. That gets skimmed off by the off the top. And who does that tax hit? It hits people who spend most of their income. Most Americans in the bottom 90% every year spend 100% of their income, which means 100% of their income is taxed at 30%. Most billionaires every year spend maybe 1% of their income, or a tenth of 1% of their income, or a thousandth of 1% of their income, you know, on their housing and their homes and the things. And so, you know, they're paying 30% tax on very, very little and paying no tax whatsoever on everything else. And the Republicans think this is a good idea. And Kevin McCarthy is like, yes, we're going to have a floor vote on it. And I don't know why CNN and MSNBC are not talking about this, because I think it's a big deal. And it should be treated as a serious proposal, because the Republicans are actually seriously proposing a 30% sales tax on everything in America. And this would be on top of your state sales tax if you live in a state that has a sales tax. I don't. So, you know, it's incredible. Obviously, we need to abolish the debt ceiling. It's an unconstitutional law. I am hopeful that the Biden administration will just ignore it and get moving along. But let's call these Republicans out.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What are the consequences to a society of inequality when the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, the middle class starts to disintegrate? On the line with us is Stephen Bezruchka, the associate teaching professor at the University of Washington School of Public Health, previously a practicing emergency room physician. He serves on the board of Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility. He's the author of a new book, Inequality Kills Us All, COVID-19's Health Lessons for the World. His website, Stephen Bezruchka, is StephenBezruchka.com. And his Twitter handle is sbezruchka. Stephen, welcome to the program, or Dr. Bezruchka. Thanks so much for joining us. Where do we begin with this topic of inequality? Is it, let's start with its impact. What is the main impact, and what are the impacts on society of conspicuous inequality?
So many people have pointed out, and yourself included, our rising inequality and perhaps even calling it pandemic profiteering. What's missing from that analysis is that our health status, we die younger because of that inequality than some 50 other countries. I coined the term Health Olympics 25 years ago. If health were an Olympic event and the race was how long you lived, life expectancy, lifespan, today we wouldn't even be there for the final day's heat. We would have been disqualified in the trials. So all the other rich countries, people living in all the other rich countries, have longer lives. Those lives, I would argue, are healthier. And some not so rich countries, Thailand, Chile, Costa Rica, they have longer lives than we do. Now, you will find in the media that our reports from the National Center for Vital Statistics released late last year showed a decline in life expectancy for the last several years. And the Washington Post said the numbers were back to what they were in 1996. So this should be concerning to Americans. I think given the choice, we'd rather live a longer life than a shorter one. To begin with, most Americans don't realize that their health has been compromised because they live in the United States. And they also don't realize that inequality is what's killing us.
Mm-hmm. So what's the mechanism by this? I've read Wilkinson and Pickett's work suggesting that inequality actually makes us crazy a little bit, that you can see this in a kindergarten classroom. You walk in and give, you know, one cookie to every kid and give 10 cookies to one of the kids, and suddenly, you know, chaos erupts. And that people, when they perceive society as being unequal or being unfair, essentially, that it affects mental and emotional health. Is that the beginning of it, or are there other dimensions to this?
Yes, I think we're very sensitive to the rank order where we stand in a society. Let's take, for example, the mass shootings, which have become almost a daily occurrence in the United States. Studies show that mass shootings, 4 victims or more, are more likely to occur in parts of the United States with high inequality and also high wealth. And so, you know, right now, the news reports are sort of scratching their heads about gun issues and all of these that lead to these mass shootings. But we're not going upstream. We're not trying to find the real causative issue. Very few entities in this country try to consider what are the actual upstream causes. Hawaii is our healthiest state, longest lived state. The Department of Health in Hawaii produced a report about a decade ago that had a graphic on page 2 that I've reproduced in the book that showed downstream factors. It's got a mountainside, typical scene in Hawaii, and downstream are all the chronic diseases in the ocean that we face, heart disease, cancers, diabetes. And where the river flows into the ocean, on the shore are the personal behaviors, exercise, smoking, and that sort of thing. On the other side of the river is health care. So the Department of Health in Hawaii situates health care far downstream. Also in the graphic is a big waterfall, and there they list what are now termed the social determinants of health: racism, pollution, poverty, and so on. But above that, they put socioeconomic conditions, and above that, the most important, is political context and governance. And that's really what the evidence today shows. The health that we have mostly comes through political choices we make. And these days we've chosen to give the rich ever more, and we're dying younger because of it.
It's really a remarkable analysis. Wilkinson and Pickett have also talked at some length about the correlation between inequality. They do a state-by-state analysis of the United States and an international analysis. That the states and nations with the greatest inequality have the highest levels of mental illness, of poverty, of drug addiction, of crime, of violent crime, of sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, there's this whole spectrum of the ills of society that we tend to think have nothing to do with inequality, and yet they're all inextricably intertwined. How does that happen?
Well, basically, inequality creates a lot of stress. Very few Americans smoke anymore, and so stress has become the 21st century tobacco. And we are one of the most highly stressed countries in the world. Gallup Global does measures stress in countries around the world. Stress is, of course, an imperfect measure, but we are somewhere in the top 5 of countries around the world in terms of stress. This, despite all of our smart devices and the ability to prepare food in 30 or 40 seconds in a microwave, the lavish lifestyles that some live. This is really stressing us out. And how do we respond to that stress? Well, it creates a lot of conditions in our body. Inflammation goes up. And these inflammatory markers essentially lead us to an early death from whether it's heart disease, cancer, COVID. We have 1.1 million deaths from COVID so far, the most of any country. When you divide by the population, our rates put us somewhere in the top 10 countries. We're not doing very well.
Yeah.
And part of it relates to early life. So as we go from the erection to the resurrection, it's the first 1,000 days after conception when roughly half of our health as adults has been programmed. So healthier countries, of which there are 40 to 50, as I've said, privilege that period, the first part of life, in various ways. Only two countries in the world do not have a nationally mandated paid maternity leave policy. One is, of course, the United States. We can't afford it, though some people are trying to rumble about maybe we should. And the only other country with a population of 1 million or more is Papua New Guinea, half of a big island north of Australia. Hmm. Only two countries in the world without a paid maternity leave program. Now, we have a few states that have passed maternity leave programs or parental leave programs, but most of them, none of them go above 12 weeks, and the rate of pay is not very high. Take Sweden. In Sweden, you have to take 444 days of paid leave after you have your baby. Your pay is your full pay.
Wow. And wow.
The father has to take 13 weeks.
Yeah, we need that here. The book is Inequality Kills Us All by Dr. Stephen Bezruska. Dr. Bezruska, thanks so much for dropping by today. It's great talking to you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Joe in Parker, Colorado. Hey, Joe, thanks for listening to KBCS. What's on your mind today?
Yesterday, towards the end of the show, there was a guy that was calling in about he's paying something like 80% in taxes. I didn't understand that whole thing, but one of his solutions was to cut public employees' pensions.
Right.
That's exactly the argument that the uber rich want us to have. They want us to be fighting each other
yep.
instead of holding them to account.
Yeah, divide and conquer. I agree.
I'm a retired teacher, mm-hmm. and parents would always tell me, my taxes pay your salary, and I would always tell them that my taxes pay your kids' education.
There you go. I think you've nailed it, Joe, and very much the case that the oligarchs of this country would very much like us all fighting with each other. And there's a long history of this. I mean, you know, throughout my lifetime, I remember the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the message that we got from the overclass, as it were, was to white people like me, black people want your job. And then in the 80s and 90s, it became Hispanic people want your job. And, you know, now it's, you know, gay people want your kids or, you know, I mean, pick your bad guy here. It's constantly look over there. It's never, maybe the morbidly rich have something to do with this. It's just never comes around to that. So, yeah, I'm with you. Joe, thank you. Thank you for the call and thanks for pointing that out. Well done. Well done. I just wanted to flag for you a letter from Harry Reid. Harry Reid has passed away, of course. He was the leader of the Democrats in the Senate. And this was October 30th, 2016. And it was a letter to Jim Comey, who was then the head of the FBI. And in this letter, Harry Reid says, "Your actions in recent months have demonstrated a disturbing double standard for the treatment of sensitive information." Now, this was when Comey was coming out saying, "We're going to reinvestigate Hillary." It's October. This is This is a week before the election of 2016. With what appears to be a clear intent to aid one political party over another. I am writing to inform you that my office has determined that these actions may violate the Hatch Act, which bars FBI officials from using their official authority to influence an election. Through your partisan actions, you may have broken the law. It's Harry Reid writing to the head of the FBI. The double standard established by your actions is clear. In my communications with you and other top officials in the national security community, it has become clear that you possess explosive information about close ties and coordination between Donald Trump, his top advisors, and the Russian government, a foreign interest openly hostile to the United States, which Trump praises at every opportunity. The public has a right to know this information. I wrote to you months ago calling for this information to be released to the public. There is no danger to American interests from releasing it. And yet you continue to resist calls to inform the public of this critical information. By contrast, as soon as you came into possession of the slightest innuendo related to Secretary Clinton, you rushed to publicize it in the most negative light possible. Moreover, in tarring Secretary Clinton with thin innuendo, you overruled longstanding tradition and the explicit guidance of your own department. And he goes on to talk about, you know, Sally Yates and all this stuff. And it's basically, Jim Comey, you are the bad guy here. Amen. David in North Miami Beach, Florida. Hey, David, what's on your mind today?
I'm not a billionaire, though I tried to win that Powerball. And if I could implode two concepts together, all these oligarchs, that's 100 million and up, they suffer from sensory deprivation with demand characteristics. Like, you know, the horror movies where you wake up in a coffin and you're actually 6 feet under.
Is this a fancy way of saying they live in a bubble?
That, worse. When you cannot tell the difference between that and something more functional, like a sensory deprivation tank where you nap for an hour and it's like you've had 8 hours sleep. But because they're so isolated by their wealth for reasons good and bad, Mary Trump is more of an expert on this question. So my solution is we give them an intervention. We create for them a House of Lords. It can be, you know, a Zoom room, maybe moderated by Mary Trump, whatever. So fine. They want our concerns. Just give it to us straight. What are your concerns? In return, we cut off their drug, their supply to cheap and exploitative labor. Biden or whatever president could do that quickly, whether mass amnesty, so that suddenly there's 10 million fewer workers to exploit. I give every American adult 30,000, or if fetuses are people, give every woman, man, woman, child 12,000 a year, spread it out, so that they can create their own co-ops, like Professor Will suggests, so we're not dependent on this triumvirate, because isn't that what we have now, a triumvirate of centibillionaires? We can cut them off, we can do an intervention. It's not that hard, but it would mean, oh, I don't know, the government calling Twitter blight. You've heard that term, blight, and saying, okay, this is blight. We're buying you out for $22 billion, and it's now part of, I don't know, the Library of Congress. It's not that hard, but you have to be able to look, pull back enough and realize, oh, too much of this capitalism is fake, and it's exploitation, and it's nepotism, and this system isn't working for anybody, not the slaves, not the slave masters, to quote Jefferson.
Yeah, I get it, David. I don't know that the billionaires would be happy to have their own little House of Lords that didn't have any power, but everything else, yeah, spot on. Thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I think the right-wing echo chamber and the wealth, the morbid wealth echo chamber is particularly dangerous. I think Elon Musk is experiencing that right now, in my personal opinion. Kanye West, this is crazy. He appeared again on another right-wing platform, this time with Gavin McInnes, the founder of the Proud Boys, and said, Jews should work for Christians. I'll hire a Jewish person in a second if I knew they weren't a spy and I could look through their phone and follow through their house and have a camera all in their living room. What? I mean, this is... He goes on to say, the Holocaust is not the only Holocaust. So for them to take that and claim, we have abortion right now. That's eugenics. That's genocide. That's a Holocaust we're dealing with right now. So because Jewish people control the majority of the media, along with the banks, real estate, along with malls, they can control the narrative. History is written by the winners. Quoting Hitler much? I mean, that's literally a verbatim quote from Hitler. History is told by the winners. Amazing. Aaron in Los Angeles. Hey, Aaron, what's on your mind today?
It's an old saying for a reason. You can't fool all of the people all of the time. So
yeah, Lincoln's famous
quote. If enough people are educated, if enough people know people are lying, it doesn't matter how much money they spend on TV. They're flushing it right down the toilet because no one's going to believe them.
I disagree.
This is kind of science fiction what I'm talking about, actually, but...
Advertising actually works. You can change people's beliefs. You can change their understanding of the world with enough money in advertising.
It works today. And what I'm saying is kind of science fiction, but I've made fun of it a little. Quite some time ago, I went into a chat room and I typed the Bush family is fictitious and they're played by actors from Pluto.
And yeah. Sorry, Aaron, you can't use words like that on the air. Charles in Conroy, South Carolina. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind today?
Conway, South Carolina.
Conway, thank you.
I went to vote the other day. There was only one Democrat on the whole ticket. You can't win unless you run.
In South Carolina?
We had,
do you think that's because Democrats are getting, like, you know, death threats and things? I mean, Dana Nessel, the attorney general in Michigan, is literally talking about leaving the state because of the death threats she's getting.
Well, I'm not afraid of death threats. I'm a disabled veteran. Vietnam, I had a traumatic head injury. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want to know why with Graham and Scott, and they're both idiots, and they change their mind every second or two. I just want to know why Democrats don't try to run from someone.
Yeah. I don't know the answer, Charles. I don't live in South Carolina, but it's a damn good question. Maybe somebody who lives there who knows can let us know. Thank you for the call. Larry in Los Angeles. Hey, Larry, what's on your mind today?
We got another great jobs report. Biden is still on track to see somewhere between 30 and 40 million jobs created if he has a two-term. And I think he is going to have two terms.
Wow.
And even though the Fed has not down the number of jobs created per month by roughly in half once he started jacking up the Fed rate. Biden is still having what I would consider to be a very good year.
Yeah, a spectacular year. By the way, Larry, something is rubbing against your microphone on your phone.
I had my cheat notes rubbing it up under my phone.
So. Okay, all good.
So the thing that I'm missing most over the years is the year-end report. And ordinarily, it used to be, and this is going back 20 years, every time at the end of the year, they would give you a year-end report, tell you what went right in America, what went wrong, how many jobs were created, the celebrities who died, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And they kind of stopped doing that when Bill Clinton was president because he was having so many good years in a row.
Basically the national media, is that what you're talking about?
The liberal biased media just tried to destroy the Clintons.
Yeah. I remember those year-end, I remember those all the way back to my childhood, that they, was kind of the obligatory thing to do at the end of the year.
And I was always looking forward to that, and I would switch from channel to channel to see what they were saying and who was getting it right and who was getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Now they just don't do it. And what happened is when Bill Clinton was having all of those good years year after year where he was seeing 23 million jobs created and seeing the stock market quadrupled at one point, they decided that they were going to destroy the Clintons and Al Gore and everybody. And so they stopped doing those reports. And then they couldn't bring them back when George W. Bush became president because he was having such a horrible year after year after year.
There you go.
And so we have...
After his giant tax cut.
Yeah. And so basically, they just sort of gotten away from it. Okay, but if they brought them back, Biden would be seen that Biden had one of the greatest years of any president, and it, if they brought it back at the same time, it would be seen that Donald Trump had the worst year of any former president.
Even worse than Herbert Hoover in 29?
Yeah.
Wow.
Herbert Hoover, a lot of people don't know this, but Herbert Hoover actually is the one that ended the Great Depression. It ended the month that FDR took office and Hoover left office. Mm-hmm. So clearly, FDR didn't end the Great Depression if it ended within, it almost like it's almost to the day when you actually look at it. And that's one of the reasons why we got the Hoover Dam, because partly because right-wingers just love failed Republican presidents. But so they named everything. I don't care how bad a Republican is.
I think FDR had something to do with naming the Hoover Dam Hoover Dam, didn't he? Wasn't FDR? I guess it was Harry Truman who.
My mind tells me that they did that.
Yeah.
And people did not really, after the Great Depression, they didn't really blame Hoover for that. They recognized that it was Coolidge that actually gave us that Great Depression.
They blamed the Republicans. And the Republicans didn't control the House of Representatives again for more than two consecutive Congresses until the 1990s. Literally from the 1930s all the way to the 1990s. 60 years.
And when you look at Hoover, what happened is in his last year, 8 months before he left office, he put in a really big tax increase on the rich. That's what killed the Great Depression. But FDR gets credit for it, because as soon as he got into office, he also did a double down on that tax increase on the rich.
Interesting. Yeah, I've for years read that Herbert Hoover wasn't quite the terrible guy that he got the rap for. Larry, it's always so great to hear from you. I love your math factoids that you bring to us. Thank you so much. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Bob in Palmetto, Florida. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Last week, I went to a Democratic Club meeting, and I learned a new way to refer to the Republican Party platform.
Okay.
It's a one-liner. From the needy to the greedy.
That's essentially what it is. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. From the needy to the greedy.
You go back to Newt Gingrich's, his contract on America. It had 10 points. Six of the 10 points pointed back to one piece of legislation, which was cutting taxes on rich people.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. That's brilliant. From the needy to the greedy. I love it. Thank you. Patrick in East Lansing, Michigan. Hey, Patrick. How's my old hometown doing?
Hi, Tom. I'm going through South Lansing to help Dana Nessel. I've been doing reproductive freedom on the doors to talk to people about taking away the, bodily autonomy and the right to survive.
Oh, good on you.
But my son is an organizer in Ann Arbor, got to see Bernie. My daughter got a picture with him. And I just have to tell you, having listened to Bernie in Madison and now in Philadelphia and then watching the Ann Arbor speech, he's teaching Democrats what has to happen. And all my conversations on the doors have suggested to me that the reason Democrats are struggling is because the party's not committed to what they know would give them a winning majority coalition. And Bernie understands this better than anyone.
Yep.
Because the way he talks, I mean, he I just wrote it all down, and I want to give it to you quickly because it's so persuasive. He's talking about 60% living paycheck to paycheck. 1% has more wealth than 92% of the people. Three people have more than 50%. And he said that was in 2019, and they got a $1 trillion increase in wealth. And then he just started marching through. He said, you've got less earnings than 50 years ago. We have to strengthen unions. We've got the billionaires dominating politics and money bombing our elections. We have to overturn Citizen United. And contrary to what you just said, he said that means a constitutional amendment. And he said we did it to get direct election of senators. We did it to get the right to vote for women. We did it to get 18-year-olds to vote. And we've got to march up that mountain, and we've got enough people. He said 70% of the people support unions. So, and then he just picked apart the inflation issue without running away from it. And I listened to Biden, and I listened to Obama, and they ran away from it. Yeah. They talked about Medicare. They talked about stopping a government shutdown. They talked about tax breaks for the wealthy. But they didn't do what Bernie did. Bernie said 50,000 homeless, 85 million uninsured, 45 million in student debt, and the Federal Reserve is going to give us more unemployment, and the slide in wages will continue unless we democratize the Fed. Bam, bam, bam. And if the Democratic Party wants to win, and I'd leave you with this, they have to understand why they're struggling. And David K. Johnston, in his D.C. report, he's just a national treasure. You know, he's done all the work on Trump. He's a national treasure. Go to his dcreport.org and read about the 60 million wage earners at the bottom who make less than the 237,000 executives. Okay? And he talks about the pay raises for this group of elite workers who are the donor class. That's who the Democratic Party serves. And that's who gives them their money, and that's who funds their campaigns and staffs their campaigns, and that's who they listen to and they cater to. Those people are getting 2.7% increases above inflation. And the average worker is getting less than inflation.
Right, they're running 3% behind inflation.
A $1,200 loss, and that's before the increase in inflation. So what happened in the last 8 to 12 months? Worst inflation in 40 years. A 10% cut in real wages. If you don't do what Bernie did and you go straight to where people live and you say to them, we have the natural majority, we can improve your standard of living, they're running the table, and for that to change, we have to have what Adam Tooze says, a wealth tax and financial regulation. Democratic Party won't go near financial regulation because or the tech monopolies, or the wealth tax and the tax.
Because they're getting money from billionaires in all those categories. This is why it's so important to get that billionaire money out of politics. It's corrupting our party as well as the Republican Party.
And by not getting H.R. 1 done and not asking for Supreme Court reform and filibuster reform, they lost their window.
Yeah.
And they've got to own it. Because if they lose bad enough this time and they own how they blew it this time and they blew it between 2008 and 2010, maybe it'll get bad enough for the natural majority to emerge with a party that will actually support them. And that's what you need to be saying to people. We can actually improve people's economic lives, but we need a party willing to do it. And the Democratic Party, God love them, I support them in every possible way, but they're not your friend when it gets down to the end.
What you're describing is left-wing populism, basically.
I'm describing building union power.
Yeah.
Tom, building one last thing. Richard Freeman at Harvard since 1979 has been talking about what unions do. And he did a report for People for the American Way. And he said the decline of unions has been a 35% loss in wealth and income. And that's based on 12 economic studies. You can look it up. You could bring them on your show. That's a 2016 report. And the Democrats were 2 votes short of union reform. Build unions. Get outside of the party politics and build unions. Build grassroots organizations. That's how this change gets done. And I'd like to see you, Tom, recruiting your listeners to join these groups that are going to bring about the real change. That's what moves the Democratic Party. That's the only way any of this has ever gotten done. And that should be much more of what your show is about.
Which of these groups are you recommending, Patrick?
Personally, I would join the union movement, and I would join groups that are seeking change. I am personally involved with the Quaker lobby. I'm involved with global justice. I'm involved with the ACLU. I'm involved with people who are actually outside of the Democratic Party. We're the backbone of the party.
No, I get it. Patrick, I got to run. Thank you. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was calling about the woman in Valley who was arrested on a Sunday instead of on a Monday. That meant she had to spend the night in the jail more than likely. Because, you know, being bonded out on a Sunday night can be very difficult. And I wondered, you know, what is her health like and what kind of food she needed to eat. And to me, this was a nasty thing to do to an 82-year-old woman to start out with. But here, a lot of the counties have a health law that if you don't have water, you can be evicted. And if you're evicted for too long, they will cut your power off. And once your power is off for a set period of time, some counties it's 30 days, some it's 90, some it's 6 months, you have to be inspected again, inspected by the power company before you can have your power turned back on. This, when I looked at Valley, it's over there by West Point, and it's north of Columbus where the new I-14 is coming through. Valley is expanding, and it used to be a kind of like a hole-in-the-wall drive-through when it was U.S. 80, and 85 goes through there now. But once you get kicked out of your house, it's very hard to get back in, and then the house can be considered abandoned and taken over by the city.
And then sold at auction, yeah.
Yes, and wow. So
all because you
I'm
failed to pay your water bill.
Yes, it can snowball rapidly. And I'm wondering if she's sitting on a piece of property that somebody wants.
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Because you see, like, we have Hyundai here, and a lot of the second tier and third tier are in Opelika and West Point. And this area is going to be booming once that new interstate goes through. And a lot of people live on the river, on the Chattahoochee. And there are some extremely large homes in West Point on the lake. I'm talking multi-million dollar homes,
right.
Up to $100 million.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if she's sitting on a piece of property that somebody wants. And why, if she says she paid her bill, but it shows up not paid, what is going on?
Yeah. Yeah, well, the good news is there's a local TV station that's paying some attention to this.
Yes, and I'm hoping that the Southern Poverty Law Center or one of the other agencies, the ACLU, will go in there and ask questions as to why this is being done to an 82-year-old woman on a Sunday.
Yeah, if you'd like to track this, if you'd like to track the story down, Norma, over at rawstory.com, they've done their own little story about it. At the very bottom of it is a link to the NBC station in Alabama. You click that link and you'll have the original Alabama station, TV station story. And that has all the details and you could contact the reporter even.
Yeah. And by the way, the guy that talked about the railroad, he's right. My uncle was yardmaster here. Mm-hmm. My brother-in-law was an engineer. He was given 8 hours to turn around, to drive home, get a shower, get some sleep, pack a new bag to take on the road, and get back before, you know, being fined for being late.
Yeah.
And that eventually destroyed his health. And he passed away.
Yeah, it used to be a good job. I mean, Louise's uncle, who has now passed away, her uncle Tom, worked on the railroad for like 30, 40 years. And it was a great job for him. And he had a great pension and everything else. But, you know, he's been dead for five or 10 years. He was out of the railroads long before they did this, let's put the squeeze on the workers thing.
The railroad yard, CSX here, is landlocked, and there's talk about moving it south, which would make driving distance for the engineers even longer.
Yeah.
Because most of them live north of town.
Yeah, and well, then they'd have to move or something. Yeah, well, Norma.
Yeah, well, they need a longer turnaround.
Yeah, I'm with you. Crawford in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Crawford, what's on your mind today?
Social Security topic that you were speaking of earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to reflect a little bit back in time, in which I think this is something that can be utilized for the Democrats in combating what the Republicans are speaking about in terms of reasoning to cut Social Security. There was a debate that at that time, Vice President Biden, he was the vice president, and there was a debate that he had with Paul Ryan. And it was a debate from which the conversation proceeded in terms of Ryan was pushing his tax bill cut or his tax cut at that time. Mm-hmm. And also in that debate, Social Security question came up, for which Paul Ryan admitted that, you know, he was from a fairly large family. He had lost his dad at an early age. And he said it was Social Security that saved his family.
That's true.
And so I think that is a really good form of ammunition or reflection.
But that didn't stop Paul Ryan from trying to privatize Social Security. I mean, he was still gung-ho to privatize the system and turn it all over to Wall Street bankers.
Exactly, exactly. And also that was in that tax bill at that time that he was pushing, yeah. For which now, going forward, that tax bill has been passed. So again, here is one of their own, whereas Social Security pretty much saved his family, that can be utilized or really looked at as a plus for the rest of the United States and America.
Yeah, I agree, Crawford. And that, and it also softens inequality by providing a social safety net and guarantees a reasonable life in retirement. Crawford, thank you. Excellent points all. Roger in Stillwell, Oklahoma. Hey, Roger, what's on your mind today?
I just want to talk about President Biden's student loan forgiveness program.
Okay.
He's got a good idea, but he's going about it all wrong. Don't forgive the principal. That's money that someone borrowed. But get rid of that god-awful interest. Hmm. That's what's killing people, is having to pay all that interest, because they can never get their loans paid off.
Yeah.
My daughter's 43 years old, and she's still going to be paying on her student loans. She's a teacher, but she's still going to be paying on her student loans for another 15 years.
Oh, same here with my kids. I completely agree. I've always wondered. I mean, I remember. I don't recall who was president at the time, but I remember when there were the president. I think it was Bill Clinton. Was bragging about how they'd figured out a way that the federal government could actually make money on student loans, and I'm thinking, why should anybody make money on student loans? Well, you know, if the Fed can loan money to banks at almost nothing, why can't they loan money to students? Make it zero interest, make these loans. I'm with you, Roger.
For federal, for private lenders, if they want a loan, like student loans, cap them at 1% interest.
Yeah.
Okay, you can charge people 1% interest for a private loan. But you cap the payment at 5%
of
their
income. As long as you can't discharge it through bankruptcy, it's a zero risk, 1% profit for the banks. And I would think that they would go for that. So, Roger, I'm totally with you. Thank you very much for that. David in Venice Beach, California. Hey, David, thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Well, first off, just along with everybody else, best wishes on your back, Tom.
Thank you.
And following up on Nicholas, but also just your last caller, I guess I'm wanted to talk a little bit about interest and also homelessness. As Nicholas pointed out, it's a conversation that we just, as a people, don't seem to want to have, and it has a lot to do with housing itself. And I think that that's one of the reasons why everybody who's made money off of being a homeowner for the since World War II has also taken a piece of the cut of the inflation, especially of housing prices.
Right.
And we've created a two-tier system in the country. All these people who have houses and all of these young people now coming onto the market facing jobs that will never get them even into housing.
Right. And the weird irony is an awful lot of the boomers' wealth right now is simply the result of inflation in housing specifically.
Exactly, exactly. And then, you know, so it's a thing that's going to take a lot of different approaches. And one of the things that I think would make a great approach is to abolish interest on primary home loans for people that are, you know, middle class or poor. If you're middle class or poor, you know, a home is a human right.
Yeah, you had FHA.
Banks are corporations that are chartered. Originally, the idea was to do the public good. So Let them make all their money off of corporate loans, business loans. But when it comes to a home loan, you know, one thing that would immediately lower the cost of home loans is to ban the interest payment.
Right, or ban absurd interest payments. The Federal Housing Administration, the FHA, and the GI Bill, you know, there was an agency associated with that. In both cases, they would backstop loans for people to buy a house and then said to the banks, you can't charge interest above this particular level. This is how my dad bought a house in 1960, whatever it was, 63 or something like that.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Morris in Long Beach, California. Hey, Morris, what's on your mind today?
Oh, Tom, I sure hope I got some time. You know, we got 40,000 different Christian sects in this country. You and I are Christians. But we follow St. Matthew's, chapter 25, verse 40.
You bet.
Inasmuch as you do to others, you do it to me.
Yep.
But then we have another Christian.
Actually, he said, inasmuch as you do to the least of these, your brethren, you do it unto me.
You're right. You should be preaching this Sunday. But
I used to. I once did. Anyway, back to you, Morris.
Well, I don't feel so bad no more. But anyway, the Christian nationalists, they're fascistic, and they've made a mockery of the Word of God. And remember the 1944 sedition trials of America First? It's in your library, if you can't be called an
I'm library. Familiar with it. I don't remember it. It was before my time, but yeah.
Okay, well, the new breed is going to be Save America 2022. They're up next. They're going to go through the same thing. I'm talking about the Supreme Court Justice wife. On down. It's just on that level. And I want to be quick about this. You know, corporate media, your MSNBCs, your CNNs, and your fascist Fox, they're controlling our narrative. And they're making big-time money with this Trump conversation. But they're ignoring some really, really important stories. Like when we talk about them folks at the border, why are they coming? You know, why are they coming? Because of climate emergencies. They're indigenous people. They grow food. There's no rain. You see, but we're not talking about that.
And, well, plus we've got this huge. These people, you know, who DeSantis took to Martha's Vineyard, they were Venezuelans. And why is Venezuela? You know, over a million people have fled Venezuela just in the last couple of months. Why? Because the government is in crisis. Why is the government in crisis? Because of a U.S. embargo.
Well, Tom, you know more than me on that, but I want to share this. It's the Republican Party, they're going to have to rescue themselves, right? Like, and by the way, let me say this real quick. Dave, it does make a difference if it's a Democrat or a Republican. Had Hillary Clinton got in there, you wouldn't have a right-wing judge, Supreme Court, and we wouldn't be talking about abortions. Okay, but let me come on back to what my point is right quick. The Republican Party, they're going to have to clean up their own act. And I'm betting, because we're going to put some bets up in Vegas, I'm betting that Hogan, the governor of Maryland, if he comes through,
the Republican governor of Maryland, yeah.
I beg you, they've had a cleansing. Because I remember when this guy, go back with me, Tom. Remember when there was a mask competition, you know? He had to have a group of his people seize this plane or whatever to get their own mask, or they flew him in. This is when we...
When the Trump administration was screwing up, back in the early days of the pandemic, screwing up even the ability to get a mask. Yeah, I remember that. And Larry Hogan.
Mr. Hogan.
Yeah.
He stepped up front, and he took care of his people, and he won. So I'm thinking when they cleanse themselves, it's going to be Mr. Hogan, you know, being the cream that rises to the top.
That's there's you know, Hogan in Maryland and Charlie Baker in Massachusetts are the two Republican governors who are not insane. You got Glenn Youngkin in Virginia now, who's trying to take his song and dance nationwide. He's running for president explicitly in 2024, and he tried to do the nice guy, you know, I'm just wearing chinos and a polo shirt here routine, but I don't think people in Virginia, they bought it, but I don't know if they're going to buy it again. We'll see. I don't know if you caught it, Morris, but yesterday a guy called and he said, thank you for not having me follow Morris. That's a tough act to follow. So words to that effect. Morris, always great to hear from you. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to KPFK. I appreciate it. Brian in Joliet, Illinois. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind today?
I always find your biblical references edifying, and you had a 10-second promo for your show, and you referenced therein Theo, and I never caught the end of it, number two, has to do with Christianity, and I was wondering if you could just take a minute, perhaps, to explain which that one is about. I agree with you that Matthew 25 is the essence of Christianity, but could you just say what that one's about? I was looking for it. I can't find it.
I'm not sure what you're talking about, Brian. We've done, you know, thousands of promos for the show over the years, and Theo would imply Thessalonians, but I don't have a Thessalonians quote that would, you know, my two.
Well, I said number two, but I was looking and looking, I couldn't find it.
Yeah,
no, I just thought I'd ask you because you said you read the Bible four times.
Yeah, I have the two. I think it's all in Matthew. I think that, you know, the Sermon on the Mount, which is more or less Matthew 5 through, what, 8 or thereabouts, and Matthew 25, and not Matthew 25 in its entirety, just the parable of the sheep and the lambs, or the goats and the lambs, rather, the goats and the sheep. I think those are the essence of Christianity, and I think that you can summarize Christianity in those two speeches by Jesus. The other one that always has been very, very meaningful to me is the Book of Thomas, and it's not because it's my name, but this is the fifth gospel. There's a book by Funk called The Fifth Gospel. It's really worth reading. There's several books about the Book of Thomas, but that's the most mystical of all of them, where Jesus says, you know, split wood and I am there, lift a rock and I am there. You know, it talks about the ubiquitousness of consciousness throughout the universe, and it's really pretty breathtaking. I wrote a terrible novel years ago, and one of the characters in that novel, all he did was use Jesus' words from the Book of Thomas, and I did a lousy job of kind of threading it through. I didn't know how to write a novel at the time, but yeah, I've always been fascinated by that. Brian, I got to run, but thank you for the call.
I always find your biblical references very helpful to me. I thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Good talking to you. Brandon in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Brandon, we have a little less than a minute. I'm sorry. It's the end of the show. You got a quick one?
Yeah. Hey, Tom. I was a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I was just wanting to add an anecdote about the predatory lending in the used car market. Mm-hmm. I'd worked on an advertisement for a national buy-here, pay-here used car dealer. And I was just observing all the inventory they were bringing in and reading the stickers on these cars that were already well-used cars. They had pay by the week, which,
oh, wow.
You know.
So this is like payday lender kind of stuff.
A payday lender, which ups the ante on missing your payment.
Right.
You know, you've got four chances in 1 month.
Right, and it can also up your interest rates. Brandon, thank you. Thanks for that, for sharing that with us. That's another amazing story from the annals of American history. We will be back tomorrow, same bat time, same bat channel. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, and that includes you. So get out there and get active. Tag your it. There's so much we need to be doing to get this country back on track. Be good to yourself and the people around you. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.